Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is an Our Paranormal Afterlife remastered episode, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. I've recently gone back and listened to some of the older episodes, and I was reminded just how much valuable, relevant insight they still offer. So I'm going to be re-releasing one episode each week, now with updated and remastered audio for a much better listening experience. In this episode, I'm talking to Ainsley MacLeod about his book, The Instruction, Living the Life Your Soul Intended. Ainsley is a past life psychic, spiritual teacher, and author. He's been interviewed by Oprah, Ellen DeGeneres, and appeared on many podcasts. Now this week I'm talking to Ainsley MacLeod about his new book, The Old Soul's Guidebook. I really enjoyed reading this book. I found the prologue to be very interesting, and Ainsley gave me permission to read the first few paragraphs for you. So here we go. Your soul is on a journey with one overarching mission: to truly understand all there is to know about being human. This is why you've been coming here to the physical plane for millennia, and why your many incarnations have given you the opportunity to grow by experiencing life in every part of the world. In your earliest incarnations, the lives you lived were simple. You hunted, fished, fell in love, reproduced, and came to grips with being in a solid body from within the safety of the tribe. But when you were ready, you began to look beyond the village walls to make the world your school. The soul's thirst for growth has constantly impelled you from within to keep exploring. Over the span of thousands of years, you've marched with mighty armies, built monuments to your gods and kings, and sought ways to give your life meaning. You've lived lives of wealth and power, and many more of drudgery, brutality, and powerlessness. You've learned about justice and compassion through suffering and hardship, and taught younger, less experienced souls powerful lessons that you embodied from first-hand knowledge. Your soul saw every experience, however harsh, as an opportunity for growth. You loved and lost, but in doing so, learned the importance of love. You killed and were killed, and that taught you to value the sanctity of life. As an old soul, you've been visiting and revisiting this world for something like 5,000 or 6,000 years. You've explored different genders and race. You've been gay, straight, and everything in between. You've worn every colour skin. And throughout your long and often arduous trek, your choices have always been made to ensure a well-rounded education. Now here you are, back on planet Earth once more. The question is why? To answer that, it's essential to know what led you to your decision to be here again. Without knowing where you've been, you could never truly know where you're going. And everything, from the circumstances of your birth to your dreams and aspirations, is influenced by your soul's past. Hi, Ainsley. Well, thank you for giving us your time and coming onto the podcast. It's kind of you.
Well, it's my absolute pleasure. It's great to be here.
And I read the Old Soul's Guidebook and I just really loved it. I find it to be really accessible and really readable, and the information is just fantastic. But starting off, you were a skeptic earlier in your life. So what happened to change your viewpoint?
Yeah, I was like, you know, just I was convinced there was nothing beyond. I considered myself to be an atheist. Even agnostics, I thought, were being a bit sort of wishy-washy, you know. So I was just convinced there was nothing beyond what we'd see. Anyone who had any other view was just silly, you know. And then the universe kind of got my attention. And it was actually in a number of ways. I used to live in the UK. I was from Scotland, and I lived in London for 15 years. And this was long before. I didn't really get my total awakening until I moved to the States. But there was a couple of times in London, a couple of different pubs that I was in, where psychics came up to me and said something along the lines of, you know, you're psychic and you should be doing something with it. And I just thought they were crazy. But there was a weird sort of draw to psychics. And I went to see my first psychic in London, really telling myself I just wanted to go and prove it was all nonsense. And I came out with my hair standing on end and going, oh my God, how could she possibly know all this about me? I mean, that should really be a wake-up call. But I was so locked into my, you know, way of seeing the world. You know how we hold on to our beliefs very, very dearly, very strongly. And it was, getting these sort of like little small experiences that should have really got my attention. The universe obviously felt that they needed to give me a couple of big ones. And the two biggest were, I moved at one point, this is probably about 5 years after I left the UK. I'd been living in New York and Atlanta, and I moved to the West Coast. And I actually heard the voice of a psychic, a guy called David Walton, who's down in Brighton at the time. And he was an old guy who told me that I was going to end up on the West Coast. But his words actually came to me my first night in this small apartment in San Francisco, like in the room, not in my head. I mean, it was like startling. And that sort of really woke me up. The next day, I bought loads of spiritual books and started trying to figure out this whole thing. You know, if he had said to me, you're going to end up in California, nothing you can do about it, nothing. Like, it was so much part of my destiny. And there I was. I didn't do anything to make it happen. I mean, I wasn't consciously trying to fulfill a prediction, but I found myself there. And then hearing his voice, it was like, well, something really is going on. And I sort of set out to really discover, how does it work? I mean, what is the universe like if people can make predictions like that and for them to come true almost despite anything else you might be doing? Then a little later, it was probably about a year later, I took a trip to Hawaii and I ran into my deceased uncle in a bookstore. And it was just for a moment, but he was there. He was about a foot away from me on my right side, as real as life, even more real in a way, because it was more sort of real, I guess, than my imagined picture of him. And he had a clear message about wanting to work with me, wanting to get started doing that. The message was a little bit longer, but the visual was just for like really just a second. And that was it. I mean, it was like, then I started talking to the other side, you know, still feeling like, oh, this is a bit weird, you know, to be sitting in an empty room talking to invisible entities. But that really, that was the final thing that I needed to get to really, you know, have me pay attention. And then I just started working with spirit guides, and I moved beyond I talked to my uncle for a couple of weeks, and then he passed me on to the spirit guides that I work with now. And I actually practiced for about 3 years before reading anyone. I was really kind of a bit paranoid about getting things wrong. And I just would, you know, every available opportunity, I was just talking to the spirit world, asking them all kinds of questions.
How do the spirit guides appear to you? Do they appear like ghosts, or is it something you hear in your mind?
It's really, yeah, it's more about hearing in the mind. They actually call it clairaudience. It wouldn't be my idea of exactly what, in fact, that gentleman, David Walton in Brighton, he would have a spirit guide talking in his ear. He'd be sort of looking around and going, what are you saying? And, you know, picking up stuff really as if somebody's speaking in his ear. For me, it's more like in the moment, I have nothing other than a sentence. And I do get visuals. I do get information sometimes in other ways as well. But it's just when I'm working with somebody, there's a thought. It's a little bit more than a thought, but it's an impression. But it comes as a whole sentence, which is, you know, and like there is no room for anything else. When I first started, I was really kind of wondering, is this just my imagination? You know, am I willing this to happen? You know, I'm making it up. And a lot of people ask themselves that when they start talking to the spirit world. But what really helped to convince me that it was coming from another source was a couple of things. One was that the information would pan out, you know, like it would be proven to be correct. And maybe it'd be 6 months and I'd realize, oh, yeah, something they told me way back. That was, you know, the best bit of advice I could have had. The other thing was that my spirit guides would use language. They would use words that were not part of my vocabulary. So I actually would keep a dictionary beside me when I was talking to them. And I'd find as well that the word that they gave would be the most appropriate word, even if it's one I didn't know or had heard but didn't know the meaning of. And that was that really quickly, you know, helped to validate this is not coming from me. And then, of course, when I started working with people, then you get instant validation because, you know, tell somebody something and when they go, oh my God, even my mother doesn't know that about me. you're getting from another source.
And is it something that you can turn off and turn on again, and or is it, are they always there?
I turn on and off very much. I do it kind of formally. So before I bring my spirit guides in, when I'm doing sessions, I do a little prayer or incantation, if you like. You know, I ask for my spirit guides, ask for them from the appropriate source, and they're acting in everybody's highest interest. So a little sort of prayer for protection. And then when I'm done, I just tell them, okay, that's it. I'm done now. It can be a little bit exhausting if you carry the energy around when you don't really need it. So I have done that in the past, you know, where it's almost like I haven't switched off my spirit guides. And people notice. I go to the local coffee shop and I go, are you okay? And I think, yeah, I feel fine. Then I realize, yeah, I'm on a completely other plane. So, I switch them on and off. It's also a learned skill, which is, I think, really exciting. I mean, obviously, I've started off with some psychic abilities. I mean, this is partly, I think, why it chose me for, you know, to do this work. Looking back on my life, I'd never thought of it as being psychic. But you know, through childhood, there were always things like reading a newspaper headline, an article, and knowing it. You know, I'd read it before and seen, you know, what else. I mean, I just always chalked it up to, well, it's just, isn't life weird or something? I never thought about actually being psychic. But there was certainly some sort of ability there. And then I just honed it or worked at it. But the great thing is that we all have spirit guides and we can all work with them. And in an ideal world, we should all be talking to our spirit guides all the time, learning to dialogue, learning to put questions out and be able to hear the answers. It takes a little bit of tranquility as well. In fact, one thing people are always asking me, you know, how do I make a better connection with my spirit guides? How can I hear them? And the answer from the spirit world is always, it always begins with meditation. I hear that all the time. In fact, they'll always say it three times for emphasis. And most of us don't get the tranquility in our lives that we need to be able to make that connection.
Yeah.
In fact, when I first talked to my uncle, I was in a houseboat just north of San Francisco, and it was very, very quiet at night. I mean, it's just totally silent. And I think that tranquility really helped me. I don't think I'd have been able to do it with the sound of traffic and TVs blaring and that sort of thing. And so that's another thing that I do is, you know, try to get, you know, as much tranquility when I'm talking with the spirit guides. I live in a very rural part of the States. It's actually fairly close to Seattle, but it's an island that's heavily forested. And, you know, where I am is very, very quiet. I mean, just, you know, I can hear the birds outside, but that's about the loudest noise. And that really helps. We live lives that are just so noisy in the main. And I don't think I could have done this when I was living in places like New York and London, and just not sufficient tranquility.
Yeah. So your new book is the Old Souls Guidebook. Can you give us an overview?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this is my third book, and it's been quite a few years since my last book, and I just really felt it was time to get more information out into the world. You know, like I feel like every day I'm, it's like being an explorer and finding new things and wanting to share them with the world. And I've learned so much since writing the other two books. And I really wanted to get this out into the world, because I really do feel that we're sort of, I think in terms of spirituality, I think we're at the Wright brothers stage of understanding. You know, I think we're, it's a little basic, because I think 100 years from now, a couple hundred years from now, this, you know, what I'm talking about, which may seem a little esoteric or a little out there, I think will be much more mainstream, and especially because we are going through a shift in consciousness as a species. But you know what one of the most important things that I learned, and really was a huge motivation for writing this book, is that when I first started doing sessions for people, you know, reading people, things would come up, and then it came up more and more, and then it became like a really big feature of what I did. You know, I'd even have clients, one person say, like, I really don't care about my past lives. I just want to know about the present. And, you know, within 10 minutes, the spirit guides are talking about a past life, because you can't separate these things out. And what I realized, and I really believe this, in fact, it's almost like an increasing awareness that everything about us, you know, your personality, your beliefs, your behavior, talents, fears, phobias, limiting beliefs, even physical illness, are related to past lives. There's really almost nothing. In fact, I'm not sure if I can think of anything about human beings that isn't in some way related to past lives. And that is such an important thing. I really believe that reincarnation explains everything.
Something you say in your book is that you can never fully know who you are if you don't know who you were.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, I mentioned our personalities. We choose a personality before coming into this world, and that personality is based on what you've learned to be in other lifetimes. And the wonderful thing about this is that once you identify that there are just 10 soul types, these archetypes that are based on your function in the past, it could go back to the Stone Age, but you've learned to be a certain kind of person. And this is a big part of what I talk about in the book. Actually, it's a big part of my first book, is about really understanding where your personality comes from. And if you know your soul type and some of the other influences that make you who you are, it's like the fast track to self-awareness. And I think one of the most exciting things is that who you are is why you're here. Because in fact, one of the chapters in the book is about scaling Mount Everest in flip-flops, and the idea being that you would choose appropriate gear. And the same thing applies to your personality, that you choose a personality that's appropriate before coming into the world, because, you know, that, and then that will help you, once you know that, it will help you to know, you know, what career's best suited for you, what sort of activities, you know, what kind of partner will enhance your life. I mean, it's everything. It's sort of, I think it really sort of opens up things.
And you suggest in the book that if a person has an interest in all this sort of thing that we're talking about, then they're probably an older soul.
Yeah.
That would account for everybody that's be listening to this podcast.
Yeah. Well, I've been doing this for 20 years now, and I'm pretty clear about my, you know, what my demographic is. And yeah, absolutely. And young souls with, you know, less experienced souls are not going to be interested in this kind of material. And, you know, I know that I'm sort of preaching to the choir a little bit, or at least speaking to old souls. And your soul's on a journey which could take thousands of years. So if you're an old soul, you've been, you know, back and forth between here and the astral plane, where you go to process lives and plan for the next. You've been doing that for 5,000 or 6,000 years, maybe. You know, so it's a lot of experience. But what that tells you is that there are things that are very important. I mean, your core values are really developed all the time through different experiences. You know, by coming to the physical plane and being in different kinds of lives, you're going from different genders, different skin color, different locations, you know, different religions and so on. And it's giving you, the idea is to give your soul a kind of really, it's almost like a master's degree type education about being human. And these core values are really what soul's looking to learn and wants to. It's really trying to learn about love. It's like that's the ultimate goal, but there are goals like the respect, knowledge, understanding, equality, and so on, peace, freedom, truth. These are very important to older souls. And, you know, also I think a lot of older souls are finding it very hard. Certainly most of the old souls I talk to are in the States, and they're finding it very hard in a world where truth has been thrown out the window. And, you know, there's so much unkindness, inequality, income disparity, children at the border in cages, you know, you name it. It's very hard for old souls to deal with being in a world like that. It's so harsh and cruel. It's a very young soul way of seeing the world, or the sort of thing is acceptable. The problem is that younger souls, they're not inherently bad or anything, but they just lack the experience to be able to put themselves in other people's shoes. And so, you know, locking up children at the border is not necessarily a big deal for younger souls, but old souls, you know, are just going, how can this happen? This is monstrous. And I just want to, part of this is to help old souls to realize that they're not out of step. We just live in a young soul world where the older soul values are not really accepted or understood. Even if the young souls do pay lip service to them, not really following through. So, there's so much else that, you know, is related to your soul's journey, you know, the soul age itself. The people I work with, people who are drawn to this work, tend to be really up at the upper end. There are 10 levels in all, which my spirit guides identified as part of the system that I use. It's called the instruction. And you go through these 10 levels to grow with a different kind of focus at every level. You could have multiple lifetimes at each level. But roughly halfway through, there's a big shift that goes on where there's it gives the soul or gives a person a greater ability for introspection. And that really helps to get towards these higher core values, or the spirit guides will call them goals or paths as well. They're the path you walk to reach that goal and embody the core value. So most of the people I talk to are up at level 8, 9, and 10. And I rarely get souls younger than that. And I've never had a young soul client. It's that really don't seem to be risk at all.
Because you suggest in the book that the young souls, because they haven't experienced multiple lives, they don't have the empathy to understand how others may feel when they're being badly treated. And it's when you get to be an older soul, you've walked in their shoes of all these different people, different genders and colours and sexuality in different parts of the world. And so you can really empathize. But it's the younger souls who can't do that. And so they tend to have more of a rigid thinking, and they follow leaders that have ideals that are not so good.
Absolutely. That's certainly what's happening in the States right now.
Yeah, and with Brexit.
It's not much better over there, right?
So could you tell us about the astral plane and the causal plane and what the difference is between them?
Yes, absolutely. When I'm talking about the work that I do, there are really three levels. I talk about the physical plane, which obviously is where we are right now. The astral plane, like I said, is where we go to process lives and to plan for upcoming lives. So, you know, we're going there regularly. Every time the body dies, the soul goes off and spends time there, however long it might take to find suitable circumstances to be reincarnated. Once the soul's completed all the lives in the physical plane and spends some time on the astral plane working as a spirit guide, it will go to what's called the causal plane, which is just, it's another kind of level up. At that point, though, the soul loses its individuality a little bit more and becomes, it actually joins with soul family. And actually, to go back to the beginning, your soul comes into the world with a soul family. I mean, it's pretty big families. I'm not sure of the exact numbers, but it's certainly in the thousands. And it will go up the causal plane and act as, again, as spirit guides. The spirit guides I work with are on this causal plane. And having that sort of almost like an elevated vantage point, they're able to see things like where you've been, where you're going, and who's in your life, and how you interact, and what sort of agreements you have. And they're working all the time to make sure that we meet each other, meet members of our tribe or soul family. It's not so important for younger souls, but certainly as your soul ages, it wants to share the experience with souls with whom it has a connection. And these spirit guides are, they describe the efforts that they go to make sure that we meet each other as the great game. It's what they do, what they're working on all the time.
Another thing you talk about in the book is Achilles body parts. Can you explain what that means?
Yeah, this is a term. I can't remember if my spirit guides came up with it or I did. And it was just noticing very early on that when I first started doing this work, that I could trace, looking at somebody's past life, I could anticipate or predict where issues or weaknesses would be in the body. So if I found somebody died of TB in the lungs, then I'd usually expect to find that there'd be an Achilles body part there in the lungs, that they would have. And the common thing would be asthma as a kid, but also things like waking up in the middle of the night, sometimes gasping for breath, you know, having to throw the window or something, where maybe you know, in your dreams you tap into a little reminder of the past life. And usually, this is the most exciting thing about doing past life work, is that you find that past life, you tell a person about it, and the issue just disappears. People have, gosh, I mean, there's just so many things, you know. Headaches, migraines can be past life head trauma. And I've worked with several people where we just found the past life trauma, and within days or maybe a week, the person no longer has issues with migraines. I come across things like shoulder pains. Neck and shoulder pain tends to go to beheading in a past life. There was somebody I was working with, I mentioned this in the book, that I told her how she'd been beheaded in a past life. And I said, well, this normally shows up as neck and shoulder pain. You know, tell me, do you have any pain there? And she said, well, 20 years of pain. She's a ballroom dance teacher. And she described how she, all the time she's having to move her neck. She's kind of having to look behind her. And as we talked, literally, as the soul was reminded that this was a past life issue, the pain disappeared. And maybe about a year later, I told this story at an event, and this hand went up, and I thought it was a question, but it was actually this person. I mean, all my sessions are done over the phone, so I don't know what she looked like. She put her hand up, and she said, yeah, pain has gone. It's never come back, you know, from literally that moment. And she's actually turned up at other events as well, and just, you know, never had a problem again. It was just simply a memory. And that's not to say that every ailment is past life related, but what I found is that so many times I'll ask somebody about, you know, I'll see what happened in the past life. People don't generally come and say, I have an ailment, and you know, I'm not coming up with a story to fit. I'm finding the past life and then saying, well, do you have an issue with your abdomen or, you know, your shoulder or whatever it might be. And you know, just the whatever it is, you know, it's just like I'll tell you, just to go back a step, actually, it has to do with this whole thing of, you know, you're asking me about the astral plane, and although the soul goes to the astral plane between lives, it doesn't die, so that you might be on life 120, but you're soul is on life number one.
Yeah, so it's for the soul, it's just a continuation.
It's really funny. And people think the soul has all the answers. You know, somehow isn't my soul perfect and wouldn't it know this last issue? And the answer is no. It's, if your soul was perfect, you wouldn't bother coming here. Why incarnate? I mean, the point of all these incarnations is about growth and learning. And so if the soul started off perfectly, it wouldn't need to do all of that. So it's actually all the time sort of learning and growing, and we just have to help it. And this is the kind of thing, this is the kind of information that I hope will become really mainstream eventually, because it can be so, so healing when you can find out past life issue. I really think that maybe 100 years from now, a couple hundred years, if you go to the doctor's office, there may be a psychic there to help you with the past life cause of really what are mostly unexplained ailments. And this is all the time people are saying to me, you know, I spot an abdominal issue from maybe big shot in a, you know, very typically in a battlefield or something. And the person has had exploratory surgery and they can't find anything. And there's nothing to find because it's this ghost memory from the past life.
And also when people have fears and phobias, so it's not just physical things that are affected, it's also your mind as well.
Absolutely. As far as I can tell, all phobias are past life related. They all go back to a past life trauma. Very typical ones are the fear of public speaking, which can also be like fear of being tested. It's anything to do with judgment, stage fright. What's happening there is your soul is being triggered. And for a fear or phobia or anything to come up, it has to be triggered in some way. So if you had a past life, let's say, where you were judged in a court of law and then you were executed, then if you get up in front of an audience now, your soul is going to go into this or put you into this fight or flight place because it goes, oh my God, we're going to die. Because it's so another thing, another little quirky thing about the soul is that it looks back all the time for a frame of reference. It doesn't look forward. And so, you know, it looks back and goes, you know, being in front of a crowd of people has terrible consequences. So let's get out of here. And as a result, you get the dry mouth, the shakes, the, you know, I got to get out of here feeling. And this is one that I had. I had a terrible fear of public speaking. And I just didn't talk in public at all. You know, I didn't give speeches. I wouldn't even walk into a room if somebody was giving a speech in case I got called upon to say something. You know, it's that huge fear. And I worked through it just simply doing past life work. And now I joke that you can't shut me up. You know, I just... But there was a time when I couldn't have done an interview like this. I just would have run a mile. And it was all going back to a past life of judgment, literally judgment and execution, which does seem to be a very common one. But all sorts of strange little quirks. Body temperature. Yeah, you know, people who get cold easily are almost always they almost always have a past life where they died of hypothermia. So when I find somebody's died of hypothermia in a past life, first thing I ask them is if they have Raynaud's disease, you know, circulation issues in their fingers or cold extremities. And I wouldn't say it's 100%, but I think it's very, very close to that. That people will talk about hating being cold or always have cold feet or something like that. Again, this can change sometimes fairly quickly. But limiting beliefs, you know, I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy, that comes directly from past lives. And that's why people think it's to do with their childhood or, you know, something that happened in the earlier part of their life. You know, something made me this way. Well, it certainly triggered what's going on now. But the trigger is how that then shows up. You have the trigger and then it shows up in certain ways. And that's totally dependent on what's happened in your past lives. And I'll see this because I've worked with twins. I've worked with siblings. They have the same dysfunctional upbringing. And one has self-worth issues as a result. Another one, they have abandonment issues. I mean, it really will go back to directly to whatever is the big fear that they're carrying from the past life. And it's kind of like these past lives are a little bit like it's like a field or something. You might not know that you had a fear. Maybe it's a fear of betrayal where you were extremely let down in a past life. And you might not know you had that until somebody cheats on you, and then you wonder why it's the biggest thing that's ever happened to you. And it's because your soul is going, my God, when people betray you, it can lead to death. This is serious stuff.
These negative things that can affect you physically and mentally, but there's also positives, isn't there?
Absolutely. You know, and I always love when you see on YouTube these 4-year-old geniuses, playing piano or guitar or something, and like a maestro, and people are going, it doesn't make any sense, we're baffled by it. It's like, no, it's a past life issue. You learned it in a past life and you're just able to tap into it very quickly in this life. So yeah, all talents are past life related. And even if they look very contemporary, because people said to me, well, what about, my nephew is a very talented computer programmer. Well, that's fine. Okay, obviously there weren't computers in his past lives, but there were ways that he learned to use logic, which is a past life talent, or some other skills that would then be useful now. It doesn't have to be totally like for like. In fact, I find it interestingly, I work with a lot of healers, and I'll find that people who, they might be a surgeon now, but they have all these lives of healing, so they're able to tap into those. But sometimes they're able to tap into lives that look very different, but they are about healing. So it could be as a midwife or a herbalist or something like that. And although it's not directly like for like, it still gives a sort of passion for healing. It makes it easier to remember things like physiology and anatomy and whatever. So, and in fact, that's one thing that, again, going back to the soul types, that you'll find that certain soul types, they just have past lives over and over where they're learning. Like a creator type, creator soul type will be creative in many, many lifetimes. In lots of different ways. It could be through baking, or it could be portrait painting, or there's just all sorts of different ways to develop that talent and that would be associated with that talent for art, even communication. And those can be brought into the present. I'm a huge fan. I didn't watch TV for decades. I decided when I was quite young that I didn't want to live life vicariously through the box. I wanted to live life for real. So most of my life I hadn't watched TV, but in recent years, through the miracle of Netflix and so on, I really got to enjoy things like the British baking show. Fabulous stuff. And to see the ways that soul types interact. But, you'll see the creator in almost all of those people, I'd say, have a very strong creator. And then, of course, they manifest in slightly different ways depending on the talents and the different influences on their soul types. Once you start to really understand where this is coming from, it makes other people so much more interesting. You can tell when they're acting out their fears or where they're coming from a really positive place and so on.
And then there's also the when you meet people and they may have been in your previous lives, because there are times I've met someone and I've had an instant dislike to them and it seems like they've also they have an instant dislike to me. And then there's other people you meet them and you just feel comfortable with them straight away, like you've known them for years.
Yeah. And when you have a soul family and you're continually running into them, you know, different members and different permutations, you know, in your life or in this life, you have a sense of familiarity. You usually have some kind of feeling of comfort, or I've known you before, especially with romantic agreements. And there's so many people when it comes to relationships, romantic relationships, trying to fit square pegs into round holes. And if they just knew that, you know, the spirit world is endeavoring to have you meet somebody who's part of your soul family, a lot of people just don't hold out long enough to perhaps meet that person, or they get caught up in relationships that aren't very functional, you know, maybe with a younger soul, and miss the opportunities to be with somebody. You should really, when you're an old soul, be in a relationship with somebody where you feel like, yeah, I've known you before, I feel really comfortable with you. It doesn't mean a soulmate is going to be perfect. Sometimes soulmate agreements don't work out. I mean, your soul can create an agreement on the astral plane, and by the time you meet, you know, one might have a, you know, severe personality disorder, or the other one might have substance abuse issue. You know, it's like it's no guarantee that just because somebody's soulmate, they have an agreement with them, that's going to work. But when things are functional, usually it allows for a deeper ability to go to an intimate place, which is what the soul is looking for. I mean, almost every soul is looking for a relationship, whether they know it or admit to it or not. I mean, I've only met, I think, two clients in 20 years who are not meant to be with anybody, and they would be, their lives would be miserable if they had to share the home with somebody else. It's never going to happen. But most people are looking for a relationship. Actually, on that topic, it's interesting because people think that if you have a soulmate, then that's it. You got that one person. You know, miss out on that soulmate, you'll miss the bus, and you know, you're going to be stranded forever. But you know, soulmates are like buses. You know, if you miss one, there'll be another one coming along at some point. Your soul will make, your soul is always trying to keep you on your path, your life plan. And so if things don't work out, it will go, okay, right, all right, let's, you know, not agreement here, let's make this work. So, you know, in the space of your lifetime, you could be with several soulmates, or you know, you're not going to be alone for the rest of your life if you lose your soulmate for some reason. And it's reassuring, I would hope.
So could you explain a little about the balance between our set life path and our ability to influence it?
Yes, the free will question. Yeah. Well, we have a life plan. This is what we're doing on the astral plane when I was talking about how we prepare for the upcoming life. We create a life plan. And the plan includes things like the entire personality, and that's part of what you include there. It'll include places to go, people to see, things to do, lessons to learn. I think the thing that surprises most people is that you choose your parents and they choose you. And there's an awful lot of people I worked with who, you know, responded with, well, you know, what was I thinking? But you're looking for triggers sometimes, so you can work through issues. But you have free will. This is the important thing. You've got a blueprint, an outline for things that you want to do. But you have the free will to choose all the time. But I think the more that you understand about who you are and why you're here, which again is, you know, why I wrote the Old Souls Guidebook, then the easier it is to make choices that are consistent with your soul's life plan. I mean, in fact, it becomes really easy because, you know, knowing yourself so well, it's almost like a no-brainer. But if you don't, then it can be really hard. So free will, you're supposed to exercise free will all the time. You're never a victim of circumstances. And I mean, only in the most extreme circumstances would you be a total victim. The spirit guides have said many times that we all have more power than we think we have, all of us. We're just not always aware of it. Sometimes that's a past life issue as well. If you've been imprisoned or enslaved in a past life, it creates what's called a fear of powerlessness. And there's a couple of signs of that. One is that you want a lot of freedom in your life because, you know, it's you're correcting after a life where you have no freedom. But you'll also respond very strongly if somebody tells you what to do rather than asking you. You know, it's a don't tell me what to do kind of response.
So how does all this come together and relate to karma? Because something you say in the book is karma is very misunderstood.
Right. Well, I say that because, I've had people talk to me about karma, feeling there's punishment involved. And that's, I think, the biggest thing. There's no punishment on the other side. And really, no matter what you've done, the universe is not going to punish you. But what you will do, you as a soul, will make choices that will help you to balance one off with the next. I mean, put it very simply, if you were a real stinker in a past life, then in a future life, you want to be a little bit more of a saint. But there's all sorts of different ways that it works, and I find it totally fascinating. And, you know, a lot of people who would be drawn to do something they might consider the humanitarian work would be balancing karma of some kind. And you might think, oh, yeah, okay, they're doing good work because they were a bad person in a past life. Actually, you're not meant to know what a person does because it's judgmental. But the person could be balancing karma because they were helped by somebody in a past life, and now they want to be the one helping. You know, so I've seen this with clients, for example. One I was just working with very recently. This is not in the book. It was just a couple of weeks ago. I was telling a person about a past life. Now she's a physician, and I mentioned I have a lot of healer clients. So she's a spiritualist type. These are the ones most likely to be physicians in this life. And I found that she had been taken off her life plan in a past life because of cataracts. And I said to her, you know, I know it's a long shot, but I got to ask you, you're not an eye doctor, are you? And she said, yeah, I am. I'm an ophthalmologist. And that's totally karmic. I mean, she's simply balancing that experience. It's up, if you like. You know, the soul is terribly aware of how limited its options are in a life if it can't see. And, you know, it'll also be aware in this life that it doesn't take very much, a simple operation to, you know, could, you know, make this huge difference in people's lives. And so she was no idea why it was happening until we spoke, but that explained to her entire career path.
Now, can you tell us, does the soul ever die?
It kind of doesn't. I mean, in practical terms, as I'm saying, it's alive throughout all our many lives. But the soul comes originally, you know, if you think of its cosmic journey. So thousands of years ago, your soul split off from a kind of universal consciousness to become part of a human body on the physical plane. The spirit guides, they liken it to sparks off a flame. And so in come all these sparks, like I say, your soul family and you come in around the same time. So you've had some level of consciousness, but as part of this group, this universal consciousness, and you come in, you have all your lives and deaths and as we were talking about, the soul's conscious throughout, so it's alive all through that. It's still very conscious of its individuality when it completes those lives and goes to the astral plane. It's still got some sense of individuality, although it's part of a group when it goes to the causal plane. But it gradually gets reabsorbed into the universal consciousness. But it takes with it all the lessons of growth that it's been able to accumulate on the physical plane. The spirit guides have likened it to Buddhism, or go back into that universal consciousness with the wisdom, that it's like adding a little dropper of food coloring to the ocean. I mean, you could argue that it doesn't make any difference. I mean, it's negligible. But if billions of souls are going through this process all through the universe, what it's doing is that consciousness is just gradually increasing all the time. And that's where it gets so esoteric and very, very weird.
So what happens to us as individuals? What happens to Simon at that point? What happens to Ainsley?
Well, actually, the interesting thing is that you won't care so much. This goes back to, you know, I was talking about my deceased uncle, you know, when I first started talking to him. The first night that I talked to him, now he had been in the RAF during World War II, and he'd love to talk about it. And so I was asking him questions, really trying to validate that I was getting through to the right source. And one of the answers that he gave me is, I was asking him about planes that he'd flown. I said, give me a list of all the planes that you flew in World War II. And there were two that I didn't recognize. One was some kind of training plane, and the other one was an American Liberator bomber. And it seemed really a little unusual. What would he be doing flying those? But the next day, I called my dad in Scotland and, you know, I just said, you know, I've got a question. Don't ask me why I'm asking this, but what did your brother, do you know all the planes your brother flew in World War II? And he gave me a list, and it was just about almost the same. And he had, in fact, although it seemed a bit unusual, he had, in fact, flown Liberator bomber as well. So I was, you know, wanting to talk more, you know, like, next night, you know, John, tell me more about, you know, what's it like to fly a Liberator bomber? And he stopped me and he said, and I felt a little bit put down because he said, okay, well, John is just one of many lifetimes that I've had, and it's no more important to me than any of the others now. So I'd rather not spend any more time discussing military hardware. that was the last we talked about World War II. So when you're finished, you know, like, what happens to us? Well, you know, I was talking about a big picture when we come to the end of all our lives, but you know, we'll go to the astral plane. The first part of what happens when you go to the astral plane to me is the most interesting, because my understanding is that, you know, you've heard about people having a near-death experience and they talk about my whole life flashed before my eyes. That's actually part of this process. People go to the other side and are able to see their entire life, but it actually is, there's much more detail, and it includes ways that you've impacted other people. The emotions that you've created in others, you know, through that. And you actually feel that. And that helps to bring many, many lessons to bear. And it's only once you've got that down, you've had that experience, that you really know how you did in that life you just had. And then you start planning the next one, but it will be based on what's happened before, because let's say you came in to learn really important lessons about love. Simon, by the way, is one of your important lessons. You're healing some heart chakra issues from a past life. So you'll say, okay, well, what are the circumstances of the next life that will help me to bring those lessons to bear? You know, give me the lessons that I need for the growth. So it's all karmic. It's all, and karma really is just about balance.
There's a couple of quick things I wanted to ask you about. Is, do these souls ever incarnate on other planets, or do we ever incarnate as animals?
Okay, Definitely souls incarnate on other planets. But as far as human souls, I've not come across it. It's not something my spirit guides have ever talked about. They just don't go there. So animals, we tend to stick to the same species. So I've not found any humans who've been animals or vice versa. And in fact, what I have found is that animals tend to come back. Obviously, they have shorter lives generally. So you might find that a pet that you had when you were young will come back. My cat Lily was my cat Tiger in my childhood and wanted to be with me again. And has come back as an orange cat this time. Male before, but female this time. But in one of those ginger cats. And I find that dogs tend to come back in the same sort of breed. In fact, I even mention in the book that there was somebody else. I told her, maybe a little bit arrogantly, I said, okay, I can guess what breed your dog is from the past life. And I found that in the past life, the dog had been a terrier in a warehouse in Limehouse in London. And it was employed catching rats. And I said, well, I would guess your dog's a terrier. And the woman said, well, actually, he's a rat terrier. I didn't even know there was such a thing. But you'll find animals not only will come back in the same breed. If not, it will be roughly the same size. Chihuahuas don't come back as St. Bernards, for example.
Could you tell us quickly about your other books, The Instruction and The Transformation?
Yeah, absolutely. The Instruction was my first book, and that's where I describe. The Instruction is actually a system that my spirit guides gave me years ago, and it helps to understand really, again, who you are, why you're here. And I picked up on some of the stuff in the Old Souls Guidebook. What I wanted to do is make that book interesting for people who've read, but also use some of the information in a different form, because soul ages and soul types are so important to understand. So that's in the Instruction. It's also in the Old Souls Guidebook, but a completely different presentation, if you like, so that it will, you know, if you're new to it, it will help to explain it from the ground up. If you've read the Instruction, it would still help you to better understand these things. So I go into the elements of life plan in the Instruction. So it's looking at things like the paths that we walk. I mentioned that earlier. Talents, the past life years. All of these can be categorized, which is the great thing. So, you know, for convenience, the spirit guides break everything down into multiples of 10. So 10 fears, 10 phobias, 10 talents, 10 soul types. People tell me that my books are very well organized. And I have to say, well, I'm not. I have spirit guides to do that. And so it's a system, and it helps to really understand it so much more easily. The second book, The Transformation, is about the shift that we're going through, the shift in consciousness that human beings are going through. Right now, it's happening as we speak, and you know it's why we're having this conversation that we might not have had 20 years ago, or certainly not 100 years ago. So, you know, people are becoming much more open to spirituality as a result of the shift in consciousness that's going on. But it's also how you really can get to this place of you know, higher spiritual consciousness, like now in this life, and it's really got a lot to do with overcoming the past life fears. So, the book relates the fears to the paths to this shift in consciousness as well.
So, do you have any advice for someone who'd like to dive deeper into this field?
Well, absolutely. Well, first of all, I hope you'll check out the Old Souls Guidebook. It's actually released now, available through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, local bookstores. And I also have a membership program, which is worth checking out. It's we do classes on monthly themes. We have past life regressions, Q&As. There's an awful lot going on there. It's a whole community, which is very appealing for old souls who are looking for, you know, you want to be with people who see the world the way you do. So, yeah, people can just go to my website, which is ainsleymacleod.com, and get all sorts of information there.
Well, thank you very much for coming on to the podcast and giving us your time. It's been a really fascinating conversation.
Well, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me on here. I hope we can do this again.
And that was a great interview with Ainsley MacLeod. A great way to support the podcast is to join Patreon, where you'll get access to the extended episodes. Just go to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife. And my book, titled Verified Near-Death Experiences, is out now on Amazon, and you can get it on paperback, audiobook, or Kindle. And I have a new website. It is simonbown.com. That's Bown, not Brown. It replaces the Past Lives Hypnosis website, and you can go to the website to find out about past life regression, as well as info on my books and podcasts. And if you enjoy this episode, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.